Episode 4 is in the books. We are back. It is Duke. I'm here with my boy Frank. Kind of a weird episode for me. I know, Frank, you have some underlying things that you saw there, some storylines that are being set up, and some things to look forward to. Obviously, the huge story here, Marty's in the hole. But let's start at the beginning. First of all, how you doing, Frank?
Good, man. Good. We watched the episode last night, so we're recapping it this morning. I skimmed through the episode again, kind of picked up on maybe a few things I missed the first time. And here we are. I the episode was a little slower, but I personally like these episodes that are kind of plot building more than just straight action shows the whole time.
And I'm that dope that just loves the action, so it's a good mix. That's why we're here, the yin and the yang. But the episode obviously starts out with Marty, who's been snatched up by the cartel. He's blindfolded with quite possibly the worst blindfold in the history of blindfolds. You can just see through the windshield. He's being taken out to Mexico, heading over to the cartel's house.
Yeah, so exactly what we thought. You know, he's flying over there, and they throw him in this hole and kind of torture him, beat him up a little bit, kind of see where his head's at. And eventually, Navarro goes down and beats him up himself. Now, this happens kind of sporadically throughout the episode, but I would imagine that in most of the cartels that I've seen on TV, the fake cartels and that type of thing, that the head boss guy usually doesn't administer the punishment that often. So you can tell this is a very personal, you know, sort of vendetta or loyalty test from Navarro here.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Personal is the issue here, and we find out that Navarro does know, in fact, that it's Marty that's spying on his wife. Goes down, yes. greets him in the hole, and basically asks the question, "What do you want?" Kind of an open-ended, general question that could be taken a million different ways, and you know, just prior to that, when Marty first gets there, immediately tries to go with the logic route. It's one of those things where, you know, you go to meet with your boss and no one's talking, and you as the underling has this insatiable need to just start blabbing. It tries to go with logic. Everything's on the you know, everything's going to plan. We're fine. Exactly. Navarro's having none of that.
Yeah. And it's a flashback to the first episode of the series where he interrogates his business partner at the time who was stealing money from them. And you know that Navarro is going to see through the bullshit right away and kind of know, you know, he for what these type of people kind of lack in abilities to set up money laundering bank accounts, they gain in street smarts to see through people. And he's done this in the past, and we see him doing it here and kind of just beats the hell out of Marty a little bit and gives him some reflection time with some loud music and maggots in his food and that sort of thing to kind of drive him over the edge.
That turned my stomach a little bit. I got to be honest. Yeah. I'm not a huge, you know, I don't have a squeamish stomach or anything. I can basically handle anything. But I mean, just the absolute everything that they did to break Marty down and get to the unfiltered truth, down to giving him rice day after day and then putting white maggots that look exactly like rice as Marty takes the bite. Realizes there's some movement in the bowl. It looks a little closer. Oh man. And it spits his food out, obviously. And it works. Marty breaks down and finally gets to the root of what he wants, to the point where as Navarro standing over the hole and looking down at Marty, as the lights are still on and Marty's blinking, looking up at him, finally just bursts out, "I want you to lose your fucking war. And I hope they chop your head off." Bold stance for someone in a hole.
Yeah, but I think he knows that Navarro's going to know he's bullshitting. So he immediately takes it to him, and he's just brutally honest, which eventually is kind of his saving grace. I think trusts him a little bit more than what, you know, than you'd expect after that, which I think some of these mob bosses like to be challenged, right? That's kind of like everyone always kisses their feet. And as soon as they get challenged in a lot of these, you know, movies and TV shows, they you see them falter a little bit.
Yeah, that works until it doesn't, right? I mean, if you have some worth and you challenge the big boss, then perhaps he likes that little bit of pushback. If you're one of the minions and you challenge the boss, you end up sleeping with the fishes. But there's a couple things that lead up to kind of the crescendo of the episode, in my opinion. We have, obviously, Helen and Wendy are worried about Marty. They're trying to figure out what to tell the kids. Uncle Ben plays a big role. Not only in just telling the kids what the hell's going on with Marty, which I think Wendy didn't appreciate, but also calming Wendy down when she's thinking about calling the FBI agent. But the big scene, I thought, was Helen and Wendy are outside. Helen then lets Wendy know Marty's still alive. She's talked to one of her sources. Can't say much more than that, but Wendy understands this is a test. And Helen says, basically, if Marty can do this, then maybe we're redundant. If Marty can't, he's redundant. So Helen's basically trying to make Wendy pick sides here. And then we fast forward after the Panamanian account is frozen, and guess who steps up to the plate and proves their worth instantly? Marty Burke.
Yes, sir. And it kind of set that scene right there kind of sets the tone for probably the next few episodes, especially just the rest of this one, where we understand that something's going to happen to where he needs to prove his worth. And quite a few things did. Wendy's starting to break down mentally. Helen's starting to break down mentally. I think we see that in both cases. The bank accounts get frozen, at least in part because Ruth is trying to launder money with the FBI there. She doesn't understand the concept of the 3% variance that they're giving them. You know, obviously just an arbitrary thing for the show. I don't know, you know, what you would actually expect to see from a casino, how much variance of, you know, cash flow you would go from. And if you recall, the FBI agent a couple episodes ago when they first came said that they would allow for a 3% buffer based on seasonal change and sort of that sort of thing. So some math there, something Marty would be able to launder money through pretty easily, probably. I remember when they said that, I looked at my wife and said, he's going to get it down to 2.99% at the end and beat it, because that's kind of he is a genius, right? In the show, he's portrayed as some sort of financial, mathematical genius, statistical genius who would be able to do it. Ruth recklessly tries to launder money and ends up going with a 5% spike the first morning she tries to do it. So instead of playing it slow, she does as much. She grabs as many bodies she possibly can and ends up going over their little 3% buffer. I thought that was a big thing. I thought that was going to get Marty out, but it turns out when the bank accounts get frozen from that 5% spike, Navarro says, "Where's my money?" Puts a computer down in front of Marty, and he unfreezes the account exactly like we thought he would do really quickly, and then pretty much lays the law down for Navarro on what he now has leverage, right? So being in a dungeon eating maggots to having leverage over a mob boss or a cartel boss is pretty significant change in just a few minutes.
To the point where he finally tells Navarro what he wants. "I want to launder money when it's safe." He also says he'll compromise an FBI agent. The bold plan there. One where if he doesn't follow through, obviously he's dead. So it'd be interesting to watch that over the next couple of episodes.
Here's the thing, though. Here's where I'm coming in. Is he going to compromise the FBI agent, or is he going to let the FBI agent in on the plan and kind of, like, he's going to double agent this in some way. And I don't think the audience is going to know which way he's going, if we ever know which way he's going, to try to swindle his way out of this. So he's going to tell Navarro he's compromising the FBI agent. He's going to tell the FBI agent, I bet, in the next few episodes, one of the next few episodes, that he's working with them on Navarro, because he already agreed to a deal with her, so he can't bullshit her anymore, and he realizes this. So it's going to be interesting, because I don't know which side he's working for yet, and there's still him working for himself. So he's going to be telling the FBI agent, look, you need to let me launder this money, and this is how you're going to get in. And she's going to pretend to be compromised at the same time that he's telling Navarro that he compromised her. So I think there's going to be a double agent here, like I've been saying all season. And I think that he's going to be playing both sides in some way to swindle his way out of this.
There's a saying for this where, you know, that you're predicting the outcome and then everything influences you towards that outcome and you know it's going to happen. You've got blinders on right now.
Confirmation
bias. That's it. I'm
agreeing with you that I'm biased here, because this has been my theory from the start. I don't know if he's going to try to compromise the FBI agent. He could, but he also could be just playing Navarro and putting the FBI onto him, right?
It's a really good point, though, Frank, because I hadn't really put that together. He's going to have to talk to this FBI agent. Number one, he's going home. She's there no matter what for the next 30 days, so he's going to have contact with her. He's already agreed to the deal, right? The lesser charge for 18 months in federal prison and getting out of this, you know, basically clear. He's going to have to cover, you know, find some sort of cover for why he's so close to this FBI agent. Saying he's going to compromise her would certainly buy him a little time. So exactly. I guess that theory does make sense. Damn, now I'm sitting here thinking, like, all right, well, maybe he's – I don't know how –
those of you that can't see us right now, I'm watching the wheels turn in Duke's head right now.
Yeah, it's pretty empty up there. And so when the wheels start turning, it makes a lot of noise. A couple of interesting things I thought. Number one, we see a real human element from both of the main characters, right? Marty and Wendy, who've had a distant marriage since Marty caught her cheating in the, you know, the first season, finally show some emotion. I think it was real when Marty says he just wants to get home and see his family. Navarro wasn't buying that, but it seemed real to me. Some good emotion there. And then from Wendy's side, like I mentioned briefly, she's sitting at home. She has Agent Miller's card in her hand, and she's breaking down. Jesus, am I about to throw all this away to get my husband back, who we thought does not give a shit about?
Yes. Well, in fact, had dreams of killing him.
Right, yeah.
Making him go away and the whole deal. And we finally see some morality out of her, which, you know, we basically called her, you know, completely immoral, has no moral standing whatsoever. And perhaps this is the tragic event that we kind of thought maybe brings some trust back into the relationship and kind of gets them back on board. I don't know if that'll hold up to be the case, because I still think that there's going to be somebody that gets out of this group of three in some way. I think that it's going to be Helen. You know, we saw some in this episode, some friction between Charlotte and Helen and Wendy and Helen, because I think they're both pretty confident that Helen at least orchestrated this to some degree. And I think she did as well. Wendy said, you know, she immediately comes to Wendy and says, I didn't do this. And Wendy says, well, you wouldn't tell me anyway. So
right.
It doesn't really matter. It's like asking someone, you know, are you lying to me, if they're not going to tell you whether they're lying or not? It's kind of a redundant question. It doesn't really matter. So, you know, you see that, and then you see Helen somehow gets in touch with the guy who kidnaps Marty and says that he's alive. And then you see her tell her driver, her what I would call a handler. She tells her handler, if this ever comes from me, you let me know ahead of time, which is some pretty straightforward foreshadowing that we kind of predicted that she's going to get whacked very soon. And I think that's coming sooner than later. Whether
not soon enough, Frank. I lost my under.
Yes, you did. But I think it's coming. I thought it was going to be this episode. I thought it was Marty gets back and they pick her up along the way.
Yeah, they drop him off, pick her up, and then go whack her.
Right, because what is her purpose if they can't do it without him? So, you know, I think it's pretty clear that Marty's the only one that matters at this point.
Well, I definitely want to talk to you and get your opinions on the flashbacks that Marty was having there while he's in the hole. I don't know if it was a way to pass the time or what. And then let's talk about that first. I want to talk about Uncle Ben, who had a hell of a role in this episode. But first, Marty, seeing these flashbacks, his dad's in the hospital, you know, on life support, basically. He's going through that. Marty's seemingly blocking out the bad by pacing, seeing 99 bottles of beer on the wall and playing a video game. Seeing the quarters going in the machine over and over, and as that's happening again, as he's fixing this frozen red flag Panamanian account, give me your big brain idea on what the hell the symbolism one that was there. This is a huge part of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I would say what, like a third of the episode is in the hospital with his younger self pacing around. I thought that more of like just a parallel to his current situation. I was trying to find something that I could kind of latch onto there, maybe a quote or anything. I think the arcade game is the main thing. It's called Beast Slayer, which is kind of interesting. And then he's watching this guy just dump money in. And I think the main takeaway from that is, one, he's in a similar situation where he's extremely stressed out and trying to deal with, you know, the extreme emotions of death and, you know, or not. And he goes up to play this video game to kind of distract himself. And he's watching the kid in front of him just dump money into the account into the machine. And he's playing. And then he remarks to his mom as she's trying to deliver the news that his dad has died, that the skill doesn't matter. His abilities don't matter. Basically, the only thing that matters is that he has more. The only thing that matters is that he has more money than anyone else. That's basically his thought, which is a very good, at least in my eyes, parallel to how the world works in general. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be good. You don't have to be smart. You just have to have more money than the next guy, whether you inherited it or not, or you just get lucky, right? So that's kind of like what he was saying. And I think that kind of drew into his motivation once he finds out the account is frozen, when he gets called up by Navarro and says, he proves then that you can have all the money that you want, but you need the brains and the ability and the skill set that he has to move forward. And I think that's how he was kind of, I think that was the takeaway from, is he's proving his worth based on his skill, not on how much money he has.
There you go. That helped me out, 'cause I didn't pick up on quite all that level. So bravo to Frank.
There's more there. I do, like, maybe there's more coming there, but it just, my takeaway was that it was just drawing the parallel to him showing off skill and being frustrated that, you know, he couldn't get on the game and be the number one player, even though he was better than the kid, because he didn't have the money to do it, which that's kind of what I took away, but there may be more there. I'm not sure.
And by the way, we want to hear your guys' theories. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at DukeDFS. Frank's at Real Frank Brank. If you guys have any theories or questions, or you think we're idiots, let us know. Give us some feedback, and appreciate you guys listening. Hey, man, I finally got something right. It looks like Uncle Ben and Ruth are officially an item.
They kiss, yes.
They kiss. They did kiss. Pretty big deal. No big deal. First time we're seeing Ruth involved romantically with anyone. You know, you'd mentioned as Three now has a girlfriend. She's probably alone in the trailer park, so we finally have some companionship for Ruth, which could be nice. But Uncle Ben from the clouds, I mean, Wendy tells him about their business in the cartel. He's talking to the kids at breakfast, letting them know Marty's been kidnapped. He's the one calming Wendy down as she's about to call the FBI agent. He had a big role in the whole episode, but he had one quote that I thought was interesting. As he's talking to Wendy out by the lake, he's basically questioning her, saying, you know, you're in too deep. And she says, handle your shit before you get in mine. He says, my shit is your shit. And the "is" was emphasized. Is there something deeper here that I'm missing, or is he just basically injecting himself into their family tie, their family business?
Yeah, I don't know. I took that as, you're my sister, so, you know, your shit is my shit type of idea. That's kind of what I took it as. But he also knows too much now. So if Helen is involved in and down the road and picking some of these people off that know too much, whether it's Charlotte or Ben or whoever, I think that he understands that he knows now, and he is involved, and he is laundering the money at the casino table, and he is doing those sorts of things. So I think he realizes now that, one, he wants to be involved, and two, he's too deep now to get out. So, you know, the other thing with him is, you again are reminded of Wendy's lack of morals when she lies to her kids and tells us there's nothing wrong. Your father's in Kansas City, blah, blah, blah. And then Ben, who is legitimately psychotic, is the more moral one who goes to the kids and tells them what's going on. And then Wendy lies to them again when they already know that he's been kidnapped and he's being held up in a dungeon in Mexico.
You know, we talked about Jonah being a potential target to get killed here. Obviously, he's a bit of a sympathetic figure. I think people can relate to him. He's done nothing really wrong the entire series. I'm taking Jonah off the kill board, and I'm putting Ben on there. He is a prime target to be killed.
Yes. Yeah, I said to my wife, I said, Ben is going to – he's not making it through the season. I said, Helen's not making it through the season, and Darlene's not making it through the season. I don't think those three are making it, because – again, completing his character arc, where he went from being, there's a reason why they show him as a shitbag, and then now he's getting into, you know, making amends and being a good person and being good to Ruth and, you know, all these things. So I think him, Helen, and Darlene are on the way out, if I had to guess.
Guy's a decent actor too. He's good casting. And by the way, he handles the situation with Agent Miller at the table there. Obviously, it's a TV show. She could have gone up to any of those shit bags with their $9,000 cash and said, what are you doing in your, you know, ratty cargo pants? But that wouldn't be any fun. So it goes up to Uncle Ben, who says, you know, Marty's in business in Kansas City. A lot of things kind of coming to a head here. The episode ends with Marty getting out of the black Escalade and walking towards the house. Very excited for episode 5 coming up. Anything else that we missed you wanted to touch on, Frank, before we get out of here and go watch episode 5?
No, I thought this episode was good for plot building. That's, you know, my main thought is that I think the main push forward is that Marty's going to compromise an FBI agent, you know, so he said. I think he's going to key them in on everything that's happening and make it look like he's compromising, but we're not really going to know if he's actually trying to compromise that person or not, and we're not going to know who he's working for. I think ideally for him, he somehow sicks the FBI and the cartel against each other and wiggles his way out, at least in some way.
I'm going the opposite way. I think Marty and Wendy are going to go all in with the cartel, and Marty is going to end up running the cartel at the end of season six. Navarro's been whacked for, you know, 18 episodes, and Marty is now leading the cartel. How about that?
It could happen, and but I would, you know, I need to point out, and one thing I don't think we touched on was that Wendy, at, you know, in the middle of the night, sitting at the table, pulls out the card from the FBI agent. Clearly, Marty had already waffled on that. He was ready to go to jail for 18 months, and now Wendy is having second thoughts for the first time in, what, two seasons? We've seen her kind of back down from her big plans, at least for a second. So we'll see if that holds at all.
What about people who are thinking about committing suicide and get right to the edge and then have that second thought? They run as far away from that edge as they possibly can, right? So that's why I think they're going the opposite direction, going all in with the cartel. Regardless, a little bit of a slower episode, episode four. I think we see absolute fireworks in episode five. Really looking forward to that, and we'll be back with you guys here shortly. See you later.